Before John and I get started, I want to remind you that we're brought to you by rockauto.com today. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, back to work here with Hollinger and Duncan. A mere, what is it now, 10 days until the restart is supposed to begin?
Yeah, we're 10 days until an actual game that counts. We're going to get some exhibition games this week, so hopefully enough of them will be televised that we can start hooking up some basketball into our veins here. Very exciting time.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about, in a moment here, the Delete Eight. We'll talk about each of them for 8 minutes. But just in general, we haven't talked in a while. This has really been a key stretch for the NBA and its restart. Anything sticking out to you about how it's been going so far?
To me, the big success that nobody's talking about is just that there hasn't been a failure yet. I mean, This was the key week, right? This was when if people brought in cases with them, they could have expanded to other players in their teams. And it hasn't seemed like, knock on wood, that that's happened yet. And each day that it doesn't happen diminishes the possibility that it could happen.
Yeah, we haven't had any releases from the NBA, I think, in about a week or so now. Of saying, yes, we had this many tests, we've had this many positives. So that's a good sign. On the other hand, you know, you have had Zion Williamson leave, you have had Montrezl Harrell leave due to family emergencies. And it's sad that we have to speculate this way, that you can't just take that at face value. But the league and the Players Association have agreed that they're not going to be transparent about COVID tests. And so, and they can't say, well, hey, we aren't going to talk about, we'll just confirm that it's not COVID in some cases, because then you know when they don't say that it is. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of, yes, everything that's public seems good. You know, there's a little suspicion with Harrell and Williamson leaving that maybe it's not, you know, that they could have had positive tests and they just didn't want to say. We just don't know that. I don't want to cast aspersions on them, but that's the situation that the NBA and the Players Association are putting us in right now. So yes, subject to the caveat that we may not be getting the full picture, it does seem to be going extremely well.
Yes, and then haven't really had. We'll see what happens in this next week or two as things ramp up. The injury concerns haven't come to bear yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, Rajon Rondo, those are the only two, but we haven't heard reports of these muscle injuries. Again, though, We don't even know who's practicing and who isn't on a daily basis. You also have, you know, there's a report that the Nuggets only have between 8 and 10 players. And the best intel that we're getting is just from players kind of slipping up and saying that how many,
yeah, totally,
which guys are there and aren't. Yeah. Like everyone else has had message discipline.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you wonder, you know, the Clippers still have some guys who just aren't there yet as well, who in theory are recovering. But I will say it's, if we don't get any more as of right now, like I think we'll have enough to where this is worth doing and it's worth following and people are going to care about it and it'll seem legitimate.
Absolutely.
So not deemed legitimate enough to make the trek to Orlando are the Delete Eight. You coined the term quite impressively, I should say. It really seems to have gotten a lot of...
It stuck.
Traction.
Yeah.
deservedly so, I should say. So we're going to put 8 minutes on the clock for each of these teams. And let's talk about them. So where do you want to start?
Let's start right here in Atlanta. I think it's going to be a really interesting off season for these guys. First of all, I think they're bummed out that they never got to see Clint Capella play with these guys. I think they really wanted to see what that looked like before they entered some of their decisions this off season. But one of the things about a bad team with a couple of good players is that if you just replace the awful players with average ones, you can get a lot better pretty quickly. So you're going from the worst center rotation in the league to a pretty decent starting center in Clint Capella. And they could conceivably do a similar thing at the 2 or 3 this offseason, in which case they could be poised to make a big step up in the East.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the two questions that I have is, number one, who is that upgrade? And number two, do they feel like they would be short-circuiting their young players, and they're going to have another high draft pick this year, of course, by bringing in a vet and trying to get better? What are the priorities going to be for this team? Is it still going to be the slow build, or is it going to be no, we need to show big time progress here now.
I think that they have a mandate to get in the playoffs. And
where does that come from?
I think it's from ownership. Just is like ready to not get their butts kicked this year. So I think that's been
3 years, I guess, of like essentially not trying.
Yeah, I think it's hard because it's also been the majority of the time that the new owner has owned the team. I'm blanking on his name.
Tony Ressler.
Yeah, thank you. And it's hard in Atlanta too, man. They have trouble getting traction even when they're good. So I think there's a sense that they have to take a step up and be relevant just to have any kind of impact in this market at all.
Well, and you can add to that too the reports of from Chris Haynes back in December of Lloyd Pierce's job not being in jeopardy, and the Athletic's Chris Kirshner also reporting it in a piece you were a part of, that there is definitely tension between Trae Young and Lloyd Pierce. And you know, when you're averaging 30 points and 10 assists, I'm not sure why it is that you wouldn't like the coach, but they aren't winning. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Lloyd Pierce is the problem there, but Trae Young thinks that might be the problem. So yeah, it does seem like there is some pressure. Now, we've noted that pressure. Is that a good thing for them, though? Is it good that they're going to try to take the next step, or should they continue to do the slow burn here?
I think there's a way for them to split the baby if they're smart about it. I mean, they have more cap room than any team, right? And so the key is, like, if they go out and splurge on a 4-year deal for a 33-year-old, no, that's horrible, right? But if they get someone in their 20s who can kind of grow with the rest of this team, who is, you know, it's a little similar to Capella's situation, right? Where Clint Capella is young enough that he could still be part of this team going forward as John Collins and Trae Young get into their prime, and be a key piece of that. So bringing in another player or two to be part of that, because I just don't think with like Hunter and Herter and Reddish that you're counting on them to be high level starters on a good team. I just don't think you can make that prediction right now. If they turn out to be that great, they should still get chances to play, but it's, you have to still bring in other pieces over this time period. And so I think there's a way to do that. It's going to be interesting though, because it's not a great free agent year. They're going to have to spend their money wisely and really make sure they get value there.
Two more questions for you here. Who is the guy that you're really hoping you get in the draft if you're Atlanta?
It's interesting because there's a lot of pick and roll point guards there, right? Anthony Edwards is probably the most talented player. You don't love him if you're talking about making a big push up in the standings this year. I think he's the guy you're looking for.
You don't love anybody in this draft for that.
Well, that's true too. The guy who, you know, helps you probably a fair amount right now is Onyeka Okongwu, but they already have two bigs who are going to be playing a lot of the minutes. I'm not sure where he fits into that. Now, you could say you'll have him and maybe you'll be ready to move on from Capella at some point. I don't know. The other interesting part of this, you could draft, well, that gets hard too, actually. I'll correct myself. It's tough, man. I mean, Denny Avdija is a guy who has been high in some mock drafts who kind of fits here. I don't think he's like super talented, but if you're talking about somebody who can play 3 and 4, can handle the ball a little bit, you know, the shot's a little questionable. There's some things there to not like, but as far as fit goes, he might be the best fit here in the top of the draft.
Yeah, as just someone who can do a little bit more on the ball, pass, has some feel. I haven't had a chance to do a deep film breakdown on him. By the way, I'm sure we'll do like our top 10s for the draft. I'm sure when, you know, the week before or whatever.
Yes.
But you and I, I'll tease that a little bit. You and I disagree significantly on Okongwu. I did like a pretty big workup on him. I was not that impressed, and I know you really like him a lot. Ethan Strauss really likes him a lot too. So we'll have to tease that one for later. But yeah.
Okay.
What else do you want to talk about with these guys? We got like 2 minutes left here.
John Collins.
The extension.
Do you pay him or not? I mean, you could trade him right now and probably get something pretty good for him if you didn't think he was the guy. So I think there's a big decision to be made there.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, he's doing the agitation of, I believe I'm a max player. And
I do not believe he's a max player, but I think he's not super far from being a max player. Like, I think you know, a deal in the 20s might be appropriate. I don't think he's a max guy, though.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, I view him somewhat similarly, perhaps. I mean, I don't see how, why he should get more money than, like, Sabonis did last year.
Mm-hmm.
If you compare what he did to Sabonis, and now Sabonis took a big step forward this year, but he kind of has that same issue of, like, being a hybrid 4-5, and, you know, how well does he really work on a great team? I just don't know how you can pay him, and maybe you can just point to, like, the COVID uncertainty as a way to not piss off him and his representation too much, but I don't know how you can pay him without seeing him next to a real center and seeing him on a real team. So yeah, I would be extremely judicious about that if I were the Hawks.
And obviously you do have the option to just roll into this season and then let him test restricted free agency a year from now. Which could get interesting. I mean, he may be right that somebody may give him the max in restricted free agency in 21, just because there'll be a lot of teams with money and some of them are going to strike out on plan A, but the Hawks might be wise to not be the team to take that plunge. It's a really interesting face-off here. It gets really challenging with the decision of who to pay when it's not a slam dunk max contract guy.
All right, that pleasant noise that I wake up to every morning indicates that we have run out of our 8 minutes. But I can tell you what, my wake-ups are really pleasant in addition to that alarm, because I sleep on a Helix Sleep mattress, as do you now. Have you noticed a difference since you got one?
Yes, I have. I sleep very well, and my wife sleeps very well, and we don't wake each other up, which is wonderful. It's great, great, great for a marriage, too. because the bed just it doesn't send shockwaves across to the other person. It's very stable. It's really a great sleep.
Yeah, I noticed that same thing too. When my wife and I will stay in nice hotels together, we notice that same thing. Like, we wake each other up, whereas at home never happens with Helix Sleep. And not only that, but you also have the 2-minute sleep quiz that you can take, which will match you up with a personalized mattress selection for you. It's not one size fits all. I've tried one size fits all with a mattress delivery company. It does not work at all, at least for me. And so Helix Sleep, whether you're a hot sleeper, side sleeper, like a firm bed, a more plush bed, they've got something for you. So you fill out that 2-minute sleep quiz, and you really get exactly what you want. The way to get started with them is at helixsleep.com/PER. Easy to remember PER because John invented it. That'll let them know that you came from us. And they'll match you up with that customized mattress to give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty. You get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. And they'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it. But you are going to love it because it's made for you. Right now, they're offering up to $200 off all mattress orders. Get up to $200 off at helixsleep.com/PR. Don't forget that /PR to let them know that you came from us. So I got to say, I found gift giving during this pandemic to be quite difficult. A lot of people's patterns have changed, understandably so. One thing I've been focusing on a lot is just trying to learn more, to take a chance to indoctrinate myself in some new subjects. And if you know someone like that who's always trying to learn more, Masterclass would make an awesome gift, especially if that person is yourself. Well, that's good. That elicited a slight chuckle from my wife in the next room. Still got it, baby. But speaking of my wife, she actually really enjoyed Masterclass as well. And she's been getting back into writing, really enjoyed Margaret Atwood's class. There are actually a number of writing classes that they have that are outstanding. They now have over 75 masters on board, whether it's Steph Curry, shooting and ball handling, Serena Williams, tennis, Chris Voss, the art of negotiation, all sorts of awesome chefs as well. And it's really set up for you to go as deep into it as you want. I mean, you can watch a bunch of these classes in short, digestible 10 or 15 minute increments. But then if you want to get more into it as well, you can follow the full curriculum. They have exercises, downloadable materials as well, or you can just watch the lessons and learn a little bit more casually. Users generally give Masterclass an average rating of 4.7 out of 5, but in case you're not completely satisfied, Masterclass offers a 30-day money-back guarantee on their annual all-access pass, and that all-access pass is a mere $180 a year, and that's to get hundreds of video lessons from 75 plus of today's most brilliant minds, anytime, anywhere, Android, desktop, Apple TV, Fire TV, iOS, whatever it is. To get started with them, go to masterclass.com/PER. Easy to remember because John invented it. That's masterclass.com/PER to get 15% off that all access pass and let them know that you came from us. All right. What disheveled hovel will be visiting next in this analysis?
Should we keep it in the east, in the southeast here and talk about Charlotte?
Yeah, and by the way, I'll mention that Danny and I, which would be a nice companion to this, on Dunked On, we've been doing young player analysis for, we've done every division now except the Southwest. So if you're trying to get an idea of, you know, how some of these young players have performed and are developing, we've talked about basically every young player in the league, gave them a development rating if they went for, if they played it all last year as well. So we dove deep into that. So I've been thinking a lot about Charlotte here, but wanted to see what sticks out for you about them as they move into an offseason.
What sticks out to me is how little sticks out. You know how people say, like, at Christmas, you say, like, what do you get for the man who has everything? Like, Charlotte's kind of the opposite. They don't really have much at all here. And it's really a conundrum of where they go from here. Even their younger players, they have some decent younger players, but I don't think any of them are good enough to really be the foundational piece of whatever they're going to become. Devontae Graham's season, certainly the high watermark for this team. Just out of nowhere, unexpectedly becoming a pretty legit, like, starting caliber point guard, deep shooting, good passer. There's some limitations once he gets inside the 3-point line and defensively, but he really opened some eyes. PJ Washington, not bad, right? Good combo forward, probably have a 10-year career in the league. Cody Martin, second round pick, was actually pretty decent, although he's like 46 years old, so he's not your typical rookie. So that, like, there's something there, but there's just not anything to be the foundation.
Well, this is something that I think, especially in small market teams, Charlotte's actually not that small of a market, but they operate as such. And I started to experience this a little bit, really, this is my first year this year covering a team that just was out of it and didn't have any chance in person seeing them every game in the Warriors. But it's very easy to fall in love with these guys who, just because there's nobody else, have to take a bunch of shots, or even totally. More so when they exceed expectations. I know that's something you've talked about before, where you kind of fall in love with your guys as, yeah, you know, the guys that we found that are success stories, instead of saying, all right, when you really look at the hierarchy of the league, where are these guys fitting in? Where are they taking you?
Yeah. I think that can be a really challenging thing for a team. And I mean, Charlotte actually last year had a good year in some respects. Like, I think James Borrego did a pretty good job in terms of developing these guys, and they got some positive contributions. Like Graham got a lot better. Martin gave contributions. Jalen McDaniels actually gave him some decent minutes after the end of the year, after he looked completely overmatched in summer league. So, like, there's some positive stories here, but there's just, like, just in terms of overall talent, though, it's just not there. And then the Rozier contract obviously was, that's looking pretty negative for them too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Rozier, I thought he did maybe a little better than I expected him to based on his year last year. I mean, he shot pretty close to 40% from three, 18 points a game. He's not a distributor. I think he was better as an off ball guy next to Graham. Like, he's not a primary pick and roll option, but, you know, they overpaid for him, but I don't think, you know, he wasn't like the problem with this team necessarily. But yeah, I mean, it's really tough for me to see where they go other than just continue to try and build up their base in the draft, which, you know, I mean, I'm sure that's going to be a common theme with a lot of these people. Yeah, that's a fucking genius prescription. You know, you're not the first person to think of that one. Also, I think another concern to me is they really were maybe the luckiest team in the league this year. And so that if they had won the five fewer games that they should have based on their point differential, then we might feel differently about them, but that's where we should feel about them.
Yeah. And you worry that'll, if they revert back to that next year, that might color some perceptions that might be unfair and result in some decisions that maybe shouldn't be made. So that's going to be interesting to see as well. They, you know, their cap sheet's going to be pretty clean. I mean, the Batum contract is finally going to end. So they have some opportunities to do some things, but they, right now, they're not going to be able to pay anybody, other than overpaying for a second tier player. So I'm not sure it helps them that much, except using it to take other contracts and get picks, which is where their head should be at.
Yeah, they've been in a tough situation with these vets too. Marvin Williams, I think, was the case this year where, okay, maybe you could get, like, you know, a pick in the 50s for Cody Zeller at the trade deadline. Maybe that would bump up to being able to get a first rounder if you also take on someone's bad contract. I mean, that might be where this team can strike now, especially if due to either not having any money from the pandemic or due to the cap being lower than expected, looking like probably going to be around 109 again, seems to be the operating assumption right now.
Yeah.
So maybe that's going to be one of the strategies. But really, other than Zeller, they don't have any veterans that I think would even be capable of playing a role on a good playoff-style team. So it'd be nice if they had someone a little bit better in terms of a veteran who could play a role on a good team to trade.
Yeah, they had it with Kemba Walker, and then letting the original sin here was letting Kemba Walker leave as a free agent rather than trading him and getting picks for him.
So we got about 2 minutes left here. Rank to me their young players in terms of just who has the most potential.
So potential.
I'll put it another way: who you would most want to have on a team in Charlotte's position that you view as potentially becoming a foundational piece? Maybe rank their assets.
Right. I mean, I'd say Graham's got to be number one because he's like legitimately pretty good right now. I would say PJ Washington's probably second. He's still quite young, had a pretty good year as a rookie, has to tighten some things up defensively, has to shoot a little more consistently, but there's something to work with there. I would put Miles Bridges third. I thought he had a disappointing season, and I think he has to really develop in some areas to be more than a highlight dunker. And I thought it was a little bit of a troubling year for him, and he needs to take a step forward next year.
He can't stop anybody. It's like he was drafted to be this kind of combo forward, switchy, strong guy, and defensively, he like can't stay in front of anybody. It's just very disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Number four, boy, I mean, I guess you still have to go Malik Monk. He played pretty well right before the league shut down. I'm sorry, and right before he got suspended, I should say. He was playing some of the best basketball of his career. It's going to be hard for him. He's undersized. He's not a point guard. He hasn't shot the ball as well as people hoped. I mean, when he came out, people really thought he could be an elite level shooter, and just hasn't worked out that way yet. But if he makes more shots, there's probably something there offensively that, you know, could he be maybe a high level sixth man? I don't think he'll ever be a starter on a good team, but could he be a scoring guy off the bench? Yeah, sure. So he'd probably be the next guy for me.
Last question. Extension for Devontae Graham. They can offer him starting next league year up to 4 years and a little over $50 million is probably about where it'll be. You know, they could throw a player option in as well. Are you making that offer to him, and are you taking it if you're Devontae Graham?
So if I'm Charlotte, I probably would like to lock him up if I can get a decent number.
So is that a decent number for you, that maximum extension that they can give him? Four for 52?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's probably pretty fair. I would probably go ahead and do that. You could argue if you only think he's a third guard, then it's a little high, but it's not crazy high. I always feel like when you're in a position like in a small market, your priority has to be retaining rights to the players you have because you're not getting free agents.
Yeah.
And so that colors my thinking a little bit. Now, what you can do with him, remember, is you can play it out into the season. So you could go partway into next season if you're like, okay, I just want to make sure that what happened last year wasn't a fluke. You could go a ways into the season like Memphis did with Dylan Brooks this year and then go ahead and do your deal.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. I mean, if you look at where he was, you know, he was probably at least a top 25 point guard in the league, but he's older. Maybe he took such a step forward. You fear there might be some regression. Hard to imagine his ceiling getting much higher just due to his size limitations. He's not going to be an asset on defense. And, you know, he's not a great, great point guard. This is also a draft that has a lot of point guards in it. That could be part of it too. If they draft another point guard, mm-hmm. then maybe you don't extend him. He's a good player. I think if you could get him for that money, I would make that offer to him. But you're also locking him in as your point guard of the future. He's a good player, but you're also putting a ceiling on the position where you're most likely to get a dynamic offensive player. And he's a decent offensive player, but not ridiculous. Wow, that was like 10 minutes on the Hornets. We couldn't contain ourselves. Yeah,
wow. And we haven't even talked about Dwayne Bacon yet or Joe Chile.
Where do you want to go next?
How about your Chicago Bulls?
So this is something that I wanted to bring up with you overall mm-hmm. in the context of the fact that they haven't moved on from Jim Boylan yet. And we can get to that in a second. But I wanted to talk about a little bit of a background that I think could be affecting a lot of teams, in particular one as profit motivated, shall we say, as are. Yeah. By the way, I've been here, like, the discussion of like some of the losses and costs for the league and its teams is already getting ridiculous because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, the Bulls could lose hundreds of millions of dollars next year. And it's like, okay, or they could lose, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Is that straight up lose, like negative cash flow of tens of millions of dollars? Or is it you'd had a positive cash flow of $80 million and now you're going to lose $10 million. So you're saying you lost $90 million. Like, there's a big difference there as far as just maintaining a going concern business-wise. And I think that's an important distinction. Same thing yeah. with the bubble where they're like, oh, yeah, it's costing them money to put these games on. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's they're getting paid billions of dollars.
The other half of that is, are they just talking about the revenue they're missing out on without talking about the decline in their expenses?
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's also something I'm very interested to see, too, is, you know, you've got the Rockets suing their insurance company for their business interruption insurance coverage to see how that comes out. Mm-hmm. Who knows, like, whether these teams are still having to, like, pay rent or not. Obviously, a lot of the variable costs have gone down. Their teams are laying people off, et cetera. So, but anyway, so that's just a quick aside there. But another aside is, if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, I think part of the reason why they finally made the front office changes was it's finally starting to hit him in the pocketbook a little bit. The United Center finally is not full. Season tickets are not being renewed. They've been mm-hmm. bad now. This is the third year in a row. Mm-hmm. But now there probably aren't going to be any fans next year, for at least for a lot of the year. And you're getting your TV money regardless. Mm-hmm. So do you want to spend the money, even though it's only $2 million, less than $2 million reportedly for Jim Boylan's salary? Do you want to spend the money to bring in a new coach, particularly a coach who might cost more than Jim Boylan, when it kind of doesn't matter how good you are next year because you're not getting any extra money regardless? Like, all the money is TV money, and that's pretty much locked in league-wide?
Yeah, I mean, if you really wanted to play that way, you know, it's interesting because the Bulls already have 13 contracts for next season. Like, they could just completely shut it down, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, not only the Bulls, they come to mind because of the Boylan situation, but I think there's a lot of teams when, for this year, the relationship between spending money and making money by actually being better and selling more tickets and getting home playoff games and stuff like that, that relationship is going to be more divorced than we've ever seen.
Yes. Yeah.
And you've got everyone hurting for money already too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's still a desire because we don't know what's going to happen next year, I guess, but we could have fans, especially by the end of the year. You're the COVID expert, so you tell me, but
yeah,
some of the stuff on vaccines and stuff makes me think maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, then there's the question of distributing it as well. And like, I mean, mm-hmm. my best guess is like, you know, maybe late summer, early fall is when we would be able to have events again, given the path that we're on. But obviously there are many things that can change with that. But mm-hmm. so and you know, the Players Association is under the impression that there aren't going to be any fans. I think you have to plan for that.
Yes.
If you're the league and its teams. And then if you get some fans later on, you could be happy about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
So, I mean, we've kind of been shirking our responsibility to talk about the Bulls specifically here. But is there any argument that Boylan should be back?
Not that I can really see, because you still have a young team. You still have, like, developing these players is your best pathway toward becoming whatever it is you're going to become that is desirable to get tickets to watch. So bringing in somebody who can do that at a high level or at a higher level than Boylan seems to have done. You know, when you look at Kobe White, when you look at, they're going to have another high draft pick this year. We look at Lauri Markkanen, who kind of went backwards this year. You know, I don't know if, does Zach LaVine still count in that, or is he, do you consider him more of a veteran now? But, you know, so that still matters. So I don't know if you just, because to me, if you keep Boylan, you're almost admitting that you're punting next season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the ridiculousness of this whole thing of like, oh, he's being evaluated. Like, I mean, I would put the odds around 1% that Arturis Karnifovas took this job thinking, oh, we've already got the perfect coach in place.
I have the odds 1% lower than you do.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, maybe the economic situation has changed that a little bit. I mean, I know management seems to really like Jim Boylan, but yeah, that it would be a surprise. Now, maybe you could say, all right, I want you to at least interview Jim Boylan. Let's interview some other people. We haven't even heard of them interviewing other people. And so maybe there is a thought that, you know, there's going to be, you would want to have the new coach in by the time you do any sort of off-season workouts like they're maybe talking about doing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And also, you want to tackle this now while the clock is stopped and not while you're in the middle of draft and free agency and everything else. If you're, you know, Karnišević coming into a new organization and trying to do all this stuff. I just the timing couldn't be more perfect right now to tackle this.
I think the last thing I can say here, I noted how the profits between, you know, the whole incentive of being good next year doesn't really align with your profits. Well, research, I know in baseball, I haven't looked at this as closely in basketball, but shows that things like season tickets are really a lagging indicator based on how well you did the previous year.
Yes.
And so they still would be costing themselves money by being bad next year because not as many people are going to sign up for tickets in 2021.
That's a great point. Yes.
But, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time an organization failed to be that forward thinking when it came to things like this. So I've been on this fitness kick lately. I'd kind of porked up a little bit during the early portion of quarantine. And when I started ramping up my activity a little bit, you're going to get some muscle soreness. But fortunately now I have Theragun to help me out with that. I was actually just talking to my wife yesterday about how we used to go to this practitioner of ART, active release therapy. And I've actually found that the Theragun works better to release some of the adhesions that I have. You can use it on basically any part of your body and you can try it risk-free for 30 days. So you don't have to take my word for it. You can give it a shot. They've got now their Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen. They've got the personalized Theragun app and it's way quieter, this new Gen 4 that they just sent me. So you can even just watch TV while you're doing it, have a conversation. It starts at only $199. And the way to get started with them is at theragun.com/PER. Easy to remember because John invented PER. Go there, theragun.com/PER right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That is theragun.com/PER. Our title sponsor today for the show is rockauto.com with their amazing selection and reliably low prices. They've got all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com just does it better than those parts chains where you go up to the front desk, the guy opens up the same computer interface that you could use at home, and he tells you, yeah, we'll order it for you. Come back and pick it up in 4 days. Why go through that? Especially when a lot of those places don't even offer you their best prices. They'll offer you a more expensive price than they offer to mechanics and professionals. That's not what Rock Auto does. They give you the same pricing no matter who you are. They always offer the lowest prices possible. They're not trying to change prices based on what the market will bear, like, say, an airline would. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now. So go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Go there right now and just put in your make and model, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and make sure that you write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Okay, next team here.
You want to talk about your Golden State Warriors?
I already have the Bulls. How do I have two teams? I mean, those. Okay.
Danny LaRue's Golden State Warriors. Would you prefer that description?
Yeah. So we don't know. The financial situation, obviously, is the big question for them, and so much of what they were doing was built on the idea of having fans paying a ton of money. Now they didn't get any playoff revenue for this year, which I'm sure was a huge shock to them, and then they've got debt service on their privately financed arena. And yes, they have this ability to add with a high draft pick and that $17 million trade exception and the mid-level, and they could add over $30 million in salary to this team, but that would mean massive, massive luxury tax payments. And so what the appetite for that is a huge question right now.
Yeah, because they're looking at huge payments just with what they have on the books right now. Like, if they don't add anybody, they're looking at for 2021 and 21-22, you're looking at tax payments. I'm sorry, just the amount they're over the tax, you're looking at 20, 30 million. So
yeah,
the payment on that, and then if you add anyone else on top of that, that gets pretty scary pretty quick. I mean, this is what happens when you have four max contracts, though, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And well, three and then Draymond.
Three
Green
and then Draymond's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't fall into the agent trap. It was tweeted out as a max extension. Do not propagate this. It is not a max contract. It's simply the largest extension he could have signed at that time, but it is like $10 million less than the max. It's further galling, you might think, for Warriors fans. I mean, also, you've got the cap probably going to be $6 million less than expected.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also got other teams who might be feeling the squeeze as well, to where there might be guys who might not normally be available that could be with that $17 million trade exception. But if they aren't going to have the commitment to spend it, which, you know, I don't blame them. I mean, they're going to lose a lot of money probably. There's really a missed opportunity, again, going into a season which Steph Curry is going to be 33 next year.
Yeah.
They already wasted this year for him.
Yeah. So this is, it's getting close to their last licks here in terms of the Curry Thompson Green era. And to let that cap exception pass, I think would probably, like, they could still be good, but it's going to be hard to be a contender without utilizing that to get another plus player in there. We saw it in the finals last year. Just counting on those three guys to carry the team, it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, I mean, it worked to get them to the NBA finals. But now those guys are going to be 2 years older as well. And yeah, it's going to be tough for these guys. Let me ask you this as just a way to finish up on them: how do you feel about some of their young guys actually being able to contribute next year? Who do you see as someone who can contribute? Who do you see as someone who can't?
I actually was fairly surprised by Marquese Chriss as a five, as a guy who could make some passes and do some things and provide some energy off the bench. I thought he was all right. So I think he might be able to as a backup. I think Damian Lee might be able to as a backup. You know, Eric Paschal got all the attention. I'm actually a little worried about how he fits in as a role player on a good team. It was a lot of one-on-one, a lot of mid-range. I'm not sure he's a great outside shooter. We'll see. He shot the ball better in college than he did as a pro, but the motion just looks like a little jacked up.
Yeah, this was interesting, actually. Anthony Slater wrote a piece about this of The Athletic, talking about how they tried to get him to shoot a set shot earlier in the year. He couldn't hit anything, and then he went back to shooting his jump shot when he actually improved a little bit. But in the long term, they want him to shoot that set shot to get a little more arc on the ball.
Yeah, so I'd say the jury's kind of still out on him. And then, like, the other guys are probably just filler. Like, I don't know. I'm not that excited about Jordan Poole. Smiley, Mulder, Toscano. Like, I'd have a hard time seeing them being, like, you know, major contributors.
I'm a Mulder guy. I like him a lot, actually. I think he's, like, better defensively than your usual shooter type. And if he can keep up what he was doing in the G League and Miami system shooting it, I mean, he actually contributed to them winning basketball games. I realize they're a shitty team.
Yeah.
But, like, they actually had their most competitive stretch of the season right before the shutdown. And it was a big part of it was just to have a guy who can actually make some shots, and defend his position a little bit at the two. So the type of player that he could be actually appeals to me. I think he and Lee, I think, have a chance. Chris, I'm a little bit less sanguine on with you. And Pascal, I agree. I mean, he's got to maybe just be a bench scorer. And then maybe, you know, he and Green could play together at the four and the five. But that's the only way those guys can play together. You can't have one of those guys play the three.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Now, Pascal did, I mean, he played four exclusively in college. So having him move back up the ladder, that could be an option to get more out of him.
Yeah, and I think as a finisher, I really like him a lot. So if they can utilize the floor being spread and also have him being guarded by someone who's not any good, you know, I mean, I think he might be able to do something. But again, I acknowledge that it's one of those things where just seeing these guys play every day, you're like, oh, this guy looks semi-competent on this 14 and 50 team. And it's just, you don't know how that's going to translate to a real team, especially with some of the small sample sizes for these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really hard. I mean, we went through that a couple times in Memphis. You know, the one year where we signed literally everyone out of the G League and we're, you know, talking ourselves into Xavier Mumford and whatnot, just because he was better than the other guys we signed out of the G League. But
I thought Mumford had a chance, actually. I talked myself into him a little bit too. But yeah, he hasn't been able to get his career going, sadly. So last question here, their pick.
Yeah, I think they should probably pick. I don't know who they're going to be able to get with that pick that is better than just making the pick.
You're chugging trade-wise. Yeah. I mean, would you trade that pick for, like, maybe not these guys specifically, but, you know, let's say it's the number three overall pick. Mm-hmm. And would you trade that pick for, like, a Josh Richardson or a Marcus Smart?
On this team, you might think about it given where they are on their timeline. I just, like, but those are, you're dealing with other teams that are kind of in win now mode too. That's a hard trade for those other teams to make.
Right. I mean, there aren't that many guys who you can, who are actually, like, good winning players on bad teams. That's why those teams are bad.
Yes. It's a key limitation. Yeah. And contractually, there's not a lot of guys like that who are available and fit into that exception either. So that's where it gets difficult.
Aaron Gordon just, like, barely fitting. Now there's the option of the stair step trade potentially, as long as we have enough time in between that. Okay, we're out of time on them. Who's next?
You want to talk about Cleveland?
Yes. Yes.
Well, we're going to talk about them anyway.
Well, let me just ask you this. Who is a more exciting team to talk about, Cleveland or Detroit?
Ooh, I actually think Cleveland is.
Okay.
To talk about. Because there are actually things there. I just don't know if I just don't know if they really work. But there's some stuff. What do you think of the guards, Sexton and Garland?
Yeah, we did a lot of film work up on them in the last couple of weeks. And Sexton, he really developed pretty well this year, and, like, his 3-point shooting has been a revelation. Like, 2/3 of the way through last year, he decided he was going to start taking threes and started making them. But he's basically, for a guy who scores that much at his height, is just about the worst passer in NBA history.
Pretty much.
And so it's really hard to say that we're going to build, especially in today's day and age, these more heliocentric day and age, where it's not just scoring, especially at the point guard position or as your primary creator off the dribble. You also just need more playmaking to really be a good offense. And
yeah.
I just don't, it's just, I mean, it would be unprecedented for him to improve in that area. And so that's a major concern, and why you think maybe he's better as a sixth man type. And that's not beginning to talk about his defense, which is a struggle as well.
A struggle. Yes. Yes. It was a struggle. Yes. That is one way to put it.
How about this? Colin Sexton or Darius Garland defensively? Who would you take?
Oh boy.
This is Cleveland versus Detroit in microcosm now.
Sexton or Garland defensively? Like going forward or for this past season? Like
going forward.
I mean, I would probably take Sexton, just get, like, Garland just looked physically overmatched to me.
Right.
Whereas Sexton, a lot of it was things that are at least theoretically fixable in terms of awareness and effort level. And I mean, he's still undersized and has, like, he has some things too that are tough to get past. But you could see him getting to a point where he was maybe just a little below average.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really just, and again, both those guys, the numbers on them were really bad. Cleveland, if it weren't for the Wizards, would have been vying for the worst defensive team in NBA history once more this year. You think there's any point in re-signing Tristan Thompson? You know, they didn't buy him out. There's talk that he wants to re-sign there with bird rights, with the theory being he can get more than he could in just in terms of the mid-level exception for another team. Does that make any sense to you?
Not really. I mean, you want to save your mid-level. You don't have a ton of room under the tax line, and you want to save that mid-level for somebody on the perimeter. I mean, they need another player at the 2 and 3. Or at the 1 for that matter, depending on who they draft. And then you already have 3 guys who can play 5. You know, you traded for Drummond. You had Larry Nance, who was really good last year. And you have Kevin Love still there. So I just don't see where Thompson fits, where he would play enough that it would matter. And then you're going to like pay him real money on top of that. I don't really see that one.
Yeah, I guess the thought would be that you could Marcus Morris him. Now, I don't know if it would be on a 1-year deal. In theory, you would want more than that. But Thompson did have an okay year last year, and he made a comeback after really 2 pretty rough years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he could contribute to a good team, maybe not as a starter, though. And so then you're like, you know, is if you pay him more than the mid-level, is another team going to want him on that deal? There's always seems like there are big men available. So no, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me either.
There's no trade market for fives at the deadline. It is what we've seen the last couple of years.
And then Drummond, who basically announced that he would in fact be opting in already. I don't really see what's happening there either. I mean, especially with him in the fold, bringing back Thompson doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And there's Larry Nance was playing the 3 for them a little bit just so they could get some size to guard someone on the perimeter. That doesn't really make a lot of sense either. So yeah. I guess the good news for them is nobody has distinguished themselves enough to where you can't just draft whoever you want this year.
It's going to be interesting with so many guards at the top of the draft because – I mean, their mentality should be that Sexton and Garland haven't done enough to, you know, to stop us from drafting another guard. But that's tough when you have that, when you're staring at that sunk cost of the last 2 years and you're really hoping it pays out, you know?
Well, and so, Sexton, like, he's pretty close to average efficiency. He averaged 20 points a game. I mean, it's very easy to talk yourself into that, even if 20 points a game doesn't mean what it used to. But
yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm in agreement. Yeah. There's nobody on this team that I'm feeling like you shouldn't draft over the top over.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially, I mean, they're going to have a really high pick too. We should talk about Kevin Porter.
Yeah, he's. I know you've been impressed by him. When I did my film workup on him, I didn't realize he's quite as athletic as he looked. And is really great finisher on the rim. Another guy where you don't know exactly what he's going to be, and so you have to be like, oh my god, we found this guy with the 30th pick. This is awesome, but you're also kind of like, all right, you know, what is he really going to be in the long term for us? But a good story for the here and now, and maybe their best prospect on this whole team.
But I mean, if you just pretend that Porter was pick 5th and Garland was pick 30th, you feel a lot better if you're a Cleveland fan, don't you?
Is it totally hopeless for Garland?
I don't want to write him off because sometimes skill guys need a little longer. He had the knee injury the year before. He did play a little bit better as the year went on. So I don't want to totally write him off, but it did not look good.
So, yeah, one of the theories that I developed as I went through this run of young players is that if you're not that athletic, that sometimes it can take you longer because it takes a long time to get an idea of, okay, what can I actually get away with, particularly as a finisher? I thought he started to make some strides in that area, but I mean, you know, obviously generally his things didn't look good in terms of the numbers. That's not a great start. More likely than not, it's not going to work out, but I'm not writing him off completely yet. I guess that would be my position.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Would you agree that we should move on to Detroit now?
Let's do it.
8 minutes on the clock here. Yeah, another relatively bare cupboard these days.
Do you max out Langston Galloway? Yes or no?
Well, yeah, it's I mean, Galloway actually, I think
he had a decent
enough attention
year.
In free agency. He had a really good year.
Yeah,
but I think he probably wants to come back though. You know, I think he liked working with under Dwayne Casey. So, aside from that vexing question,
yeah, I mean, Troy Weaver walks into an empty plate here. You know, he or an empty canvas, I should say. He can. He has a lot of freedom to do what he wants to do here because there's nothing really nailed down yet. He gets to make the decision on Christian Wood, right? He gets to make the decision on Kennard's extension. Blake Griffin, I think, has to be seen as probably a sunk cost at this point. If he recuperates to the point that they could trade him, obviously that would be fantastic. And then otherwise, like, their books are clean. They got 1 year of Derrick Rose. If they could get a first round pick for him, I think they'd be happy to accept that. And it's kind of a blank slate otherwise.
So in your piece with James Edwards, you've been doing a nice piece at theathletic.com, or a nice series, I should say, going through all the teams with the local writers and having a dialogue with them. But you and he were bandying about, you know, in like the $16 million a year range for Christian Wood.
Mm-hmm.
That would require dipping into their cap space. They can only pay him about $10 million or so per year with his early bird rights that they have. And so anything above there, they have to use cap space. Why is he worth that much to you?
I thought he was, I mean, statistically, he was one of the best centers in the league last season. I do think his numbers from G League and seeing him in G League, like, he was definitely, for a couple of years, a top five player in the G League. So it doesn't totally floor me that he came in and was successful. Maybe not that successful, but that he came in and had success. So I think he projects as kind of a low-level starter, even on a decent team. There's some defensive questions there, but offensively, I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, I think you and I don't disagree, I think, on what he is, but maybe just like what the market will be for such a player. Like, who else is paying him that much is my question.
So the center market, you're probably looking at Charlotte, maybe only one or two other teams, if that. So that's going to be a problem, is finding somebody else to pay him that much if you're his agent.
Yeah. So that's part of why I'm skeptical. And then you throw in just, there's always a stickiness with guys who are undrafted, unless it's the summer of 2016 and Hassan Whiteside,
mm-hmm.
of just that it's got to be a little bit fluky, that they're not building off as big of a number. They also, just because they haven't made anything in their careers, they're kind of more open to taking less and getting some security and life-changing money. Whereas if a guy was drafted in the top five and he's made $20 million already in his career, he can kind of afford to be a little more judicious.
Yeah.
I mean, my best guess is that they offer him that early bird contract and he takes it, particularly if they give him some years. But,
I do. Then to be clear, we were going back and forth on what his, on where I had pegged his or projected his value for next season.
Right.
And so, whether he actually gets paid that is a completely different question. And market forces kind of shoehorn a lot of people into the mid-level range just because that's where that exception is, and that's what a lot of teams are going to have this year. So I could definitely see that happening with him, where he gets that early bird money on a long deal, just for the reasons you stated. And that would be helpful for Detroit it should be helpful for them. I mean, it would give them a lot more cap room, but what are they going to spend their cap room on this year?
Yeah, it could be taking on a bad contract or two. Because yeah, they basically to explain that to those who might be new listeners that haven't been with us for a while, Wood is finishing up a 2-year contract. So, but that's at the minimum. So when you come off a minimum contract, your cap hold is the minimum. Since he's got 2 years of having been on the team, they have what's called early bird rights rather than full bird rights. Full bird rights, you can pay the guy whatever you want. Early bird rights, you can only go up to a contract that starts at
the league average salary, which is
the estimated average player salary. So, so that's why he only counts for the minimum on their books, and they can pay him up to around that $10 million or so starting salary. But if you go above that $10 million, now you've exceeded what you can do with just that cap hold placeholder, and so he would count for whatever they actually sign him for. That's just a quick CBA explainer. With a sports business classroom coming up, I gotta get into teaching mode. Last thing on them, Sekou Doumbouya, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know, I had scouted him in France. He was very good, or impressed a lot of people, like at Basketball Without Borders and some age group competition when he was a younger player, you know, 16 years old, that type of range. And when I saw him in France, I was a little disappointed because I felt like he wasn't super skilled, and I think he's shown that. Like, his skill level definitely needs to get a lot better. And while he had a pretty good NBA body and could go end to end and stuff, he didn't wow you with athleticism, and so it was just hard to see where he was going to really climb that ladder. Now, that said, I mean, his numbers this year were bad. He was also the youngest player in the league. Like, we shouldn't have expected him to be good this year. Yes. So, and looking at the rest of this draft, I'm not sure he was a bad gamble at the point they took him, which was 14th. So, but it's hard for me to get super excited about his future at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think that he has like star potential or anything like that, but in theory, I think the physical tools are there to be a good combo forward. But yeah, as an isolation defender, as a shooter, you know, like a lot of young players, has been someone who's been on the ball his whole career, and that learning to shift to playing off the ball, it can be kind of difficult. Okay, next team.
All right. Let's go up north to Minnesota.
Yeah, they're really a fascinating outfit. As it stands right now, I mean, they don't have much space. They're going to draft someone this year, but that probably won't change their fortunes much. They got to bring back Hernan Gomez and Beasley in theory. Let's pretend that they're on the team.
Okay.
As of right, we can talk about their future free agency in a second, but what do you see this team doing next year if they stay healthy with this cast of characters?
Maybe like 32 and 50.
I might be a little more optimistic on it, especially if Towns can stay healthy all year. I think they actually could be like a really, really good offense, but they're not going to stop anybody. I mean, that's why, you know, their defense is going to be in the 20s. And so when that's the case, it's hard to get much over 500. So, you know, I mean, they could get lucky. I could see them getting high 30s, maybe low 40s at best. But yeah, 32 and 50 doesn't strike me as like impossibly low either. You know, I see them in kind of that mid to upper 30s range personally. They don't really have many ways. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So much depends on Towns. I mean, he's so by far their best player. And is really like one of the most underrated players in the league for me. I think he's really good, even with the defensive questions. Like offensively, he's such a beast. He rebounds, he shoots, he can score down low. Just so many weapons.
A commentator on Twitter was like, "Yeah, how come you didn't mention him as like the unfairly maligned good stats bad team guy?" And I think that was a good point. We probably should have mentioned him.
Yeah, yeah. Russell hopefully will try more on defense than he did in Golden State. If he gives them something closer to the Brooklyn version, I think that helps them more than having Andrew Wiggins, certainly. So they got that. They have their pick and roll combo. I just don't think they have any other like starters on the team.
Yeah, Beasley showed some things, but he's yet another offense first player. I think Beasley and Hernan Gomez, there's some chance that they could evolve into being decent players, but yeah, and then, you know, Okogie, Culver, with neither of them being able to shoot, it's kind of hard for them to fit in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Okogie, at least, you know, he could be like your defensive stopper. He's really good in transition, but yeah, him shooting in the 20s is a problem.
So, and they're, I mean, I've got them as only about maybe $13 million in space below the tax, most likely.
Depending on what they play Beasley and Wancho. Yeah, I want to say they have 27 before they pay those guys. And then that,
I have to update my luxury tax number for next year compared to the cap number. But yeah, that's so they made this trade, and they got these buddies together, Russell and Towns, but a realistic self-assessment of where they are next year is kind of where exactly. So I'm to me, and I think they've done a better job of kind of working around the margins a little bit.
I thought they actually did a really good job of that in the last year. When the trade to bring in Beasley and Wancho, the Covington trade, I thought Lehman was pretty decent value. I thought Naz Reid was a pretty decent find for a undrafted free agent. But like, none of that's going to matter until they stack that into higher level players.
Yeah, they do have two picks in this draft.
We'll see. they get screwed out of that Brooklyn trip.
That's true. Brooklyn, yeah, pick. Brooklyn. They are trying hard. but they most likely will keep that Brooklyn Lotto protected first that they got at the trade deadline. So for Robert Covington, yeah, and then they've got their pick as well. That'll be interesting. Who they like in the draft.
Interesting another team where it's interesting if one of these pick and roll guards is there and they have to make a decision on that when they already have Russell there.
Oh man, I'm just champing at the bit to talk about the draft, but people aren't interested in the draft right now. We gotta save it.
Hold your fire.
We have a lot of disagreements, actually. It's gonna be fun to talk about that.
Okay.
So, Wancho and Beasley, they're restricted free agents. What are you doing with them?
You have to keep them at this point, I think. I mean, you have this, you don't trade away a first round pick to get these guys and then be like, yeah, you know what? We thought $7.3 million was a bit much. We're not going to match that. Like, I just don't see that happening. They should be able to get pretty reasonable money on both guys.
What's reasonable to you?
Well, let's say they had to pay Beasley like 12 and Wancho like 6.
I mean, yeah, I'd be very happy with those numbers. It's now, Beasley turned down like 3 for $30 in an extension. Rich Paul knows that they traded a first round pick to get him. He shot it really well in 7 games for the team after having a rough year with Denver. I think like 12, 13 would be fair for him, but I don't know if his representation sees it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then who's the other team that's going to go above that to pay him?
Yeah, great question. I don't know the answer.
Could be Atlanta. Atlanta has a lot of room. Malik Beasley's from there. They could use, they could use another two who can shoot it. Could be. Wancho, I think they'll be able to keep. I don't think they're going to have to fight that hard on that one.
Well, I mean, they have it within their power to keep him or not. I mean, we've also seen Rich Paul with Eric Bledsoe, with Tristan Thompson, really drag out the restricted free agent game, threatened to take the qualifying offer. Mm-hmm. Although you can't go quite as long this year, hopefully.
Right.
4 months after July, 3 months after July, it's going to resolve itself pretty quickly. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, 3 for $40 for Beasley. Maybe someone like Kelly Oubre could be a little bit of a model there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shorter deal, but maybe a little more money.
That's where I start getting into walk away territory. Even if I'm, it's hard. I mean, you're the T-Wolves again, a team like the T-Wolves, you want to keep the asset, if you can, but man, it also hurts when you overpay guys on a long deal they know.
Yeah. But if it's only 2 years, to pay a little bit more, then you're protecting yourself and they're not doing anything in free agency the next 2 years anyway, just with what they already have in the books. So.
If the owner met with him and asked him to play hard, would you give him the max?
Should we move on to the Knicks?
Okay, all right, let's go.
Last team here, New York Knickerbockers, 8 minutes on the clock.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to unpack here.
Let's do start with a self-assessment of them and some of their young players and what you think of those. Let's start with RJ Barrett here.
Man, he was not good. The team was not set up to succeed around him. You're right, because there wasn't enough spacing for him to really play his game. But the finishing looked stiff. He's not a good shooter. Defensively, he was okay at best. So probably a disappointing season overall.
Yeah, I think so. And I, like you said, I think they did with Mitchell Robinson, with him, with the lesser extent to Kevin Knox or Dennis Smith, just having this black hole level of spacing all season. I said this on the pod. Would you agree that they had maybe the worst spacing of any team in the last 5 years?
Wow. I might have been part of one of those teams.
Well, but at least your like Gasol and Randolph could shoot.
Yeah, our bigs could shoot. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, I guess that was still in the last 5 years, though, that Tony Allen, Zach Randolph playing together. But yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty bad. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons they paid Wayne Ellington as much as they did. And then they just couldn't get anything out of him. And he kind of fell out of the mix. And Knox is another guy who was supposed to give him something in that respect. And he's just been unplayable. So, and Reggie Bullock, too, that probably affected them. But yeah, especially after the Morris trade, I mean, they just didn't have anything.
So, yeah, I think is Barrett, I mean, they've talked about building around RJ Barrett, which is admirable in the sense that you got to give him a better environment. But is he worth that type of status of we're building around this guy?
I don't think so. I maybe he shows himself to be worthy of it in year two, but I certainly don't think so.
If he does work out to become like a real high level of creator, like what is the path for that? Like that's what I've always struggled with of what does it look like when it's good for him? Because we know what it looks like when he's bad. We kind of saw that last year. What does it look like when it's good? Like how do you talk yourself into it?
A little bit DeRozan-y, with maybe more at the rim and fewer pull-ups and a little more passing. That would probably be how I talk myself into it.
Yeah, we didn't get to see him as a distributor that much this year, in part due to that terrible spacing and having two guys around the basket most of the time. Like the passing ability, maybe you could say would be the most likely to take a step forward. But yeah, I mean, it just, he doesn't have the athleticism of DeRozan.
That's the issue. That I think was the most troubling part is when he got to the rim and had to finish over length, it was really a challenge for him to do that. And that's a hard thing to fix.
Yeah. So and it's hard to see him becoming like a plus jump shooter. And so if you're not that quick and you're not that good of a shooter, then what are you at the shooting guard position?
You're Jarrett Culver. That's what you are.
Pretty amazing that we went a whole segment on the Wolves and didn't even mention Culver.
Yeah. We kind of slid right past that one.
Yeah. So I think it would be fascinating to see whether they would draft Anthony Edwards if they're in position to do so, or they'll say, no, we have RJ Barrett.
Wow. When you double down on the bad pick from the year before to make your current year pick worse.
Well, isn't it doubling down by not drafting someone at his position?
That's what I mean.
You're putting more eggs in the basket of the bad pick you already made. At least this would be acknowledging possibly that it was a mistake.
I guess I got confused by what you're saying. I thought you were saying they wouldn't draft Edwards because they already drafted Barrett.
Oh no, I wasn't taking a position on that. I was saying, you know, would they not draft him because of Barrett? But yeah, that's
I don't think so. I mean, because you could argue Barrett's your three and Edwards is your two also.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of teams that don't really have like a three-sized three prototypically. I'm not even going to mention the name of Dennis Smith Jr. because I might get some PTSD from that. But Frank Ntilikina, Mitchell Robinson, thoughts on those guys?
Frank Ntilikina to me is like on the path to being a decent backup. He defends. He can make a jump shot. He can't get by anybody. He's not going to be any kind of high-level creator offensively. But he could be like solid enough. He'll stay in the league. Mitchell Robinson is really interesting. That six foul rule is still a little bit of a problem for him. And, some of the lapses are bad, but his good plays are so good. I mean, he'd make so many plays that you can't teach. His instincts as a shot blocker, his ability to finish difficult lobs, Like, not just he can go up and get it, but he can go up and align his body in space and catch the ball with one hand and turn and dunk it and not lose track of where he is, which I think is an underrated skill, is really impressive.
Yeah, he was another reason why I was so disappointed in some of those signings they made and having no spacing, because that really takes away his impact. I mean, he could be a DeAndre Jordan, Rudy Gobert style of impact offensively, but if you've got another power forward standing right next to him, then he can't have that impact.
Yeah, I think DeAndre Jordan is a great comp for him. And yeah, exactly. I mean, but playing with these guys like, you know, Julius Randle and Taj Gibson, like it just didn't fit. None of the what they did last summer was so bizarre that not only that they didn't use the cap space to harvest draft picks like some of the other rebuilding teams did, but then to sign the players they did that actively got in the way of their best young players. It's crazy.
What would you do with their non-guarantee guys? They got Bullock at $4 million, Elfrid Payton at $8 million, Wayne Ellington at $8 million, Taj Gibson at $9 million. That makes up basically all of the $40 million in cap space you could potentially have if you don't bring any of those guys back. You want to bring back any of those guys?
Yeah, I would bring back Elfrid Payton. I think he's a plus value at $8 million. I thought that was their best move last summer. He was legitimately pretty good when he came back, and I thought the Knicks played a lot better once they got him in the lineup and had a real point guard. He has limitations, obviously, with the, he's another below average shooter. I think he's probably a backup on a good team, but on this team, like, he was really helpful.
Considering the other options as well.
And then Bullock,
you got to keep, right?
Bullock's money is low enough that you might as well keep him. I mean, it's 4.2. He's a good role playing wing, you know, good reserve, if nothing else. I think you got to keep him at that money. And he might have some trade value for you if you hang on to him, too.
Yeah, Gibson, I think I'd probably let go just more due to the fit even, but also, you know, $9 million bucks for him is a little much.
Well, if you hire Thibs, you got to let Gibson go. Otherwise, he's going to play him 47 and a half minutes a game and Mitchell Robinson the other 30 seconds.
I mean, I guess if they do hire him, there's no way they're letting him go, is there? Also, complicating things is all these guys have guarantee dates very early, 6/28, which is now, you know, it'd be 2 days before.
10/17 is the new date. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a concern too, because you can't kind of make the decision of like, okay, can we do better with our money or not here?
Well,
you know, with say Wayne Ellington.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they'd probably let him go anyway, but.
Yeah, it would be Ellington and Gibson would probably be the two big ones. I mean, one presumes they will decline Bobby Portis's option. I mean, we haven't even talked about that.
Oh God. Okay, let's wrap things up here. What did you write about for The Athletic this week before we go?
So, for The Athletic, I actually wrote a little bit about a couple of these teams. I wrote about Golden State and a particular trade that I think might be interesting for them to make as they try to use that exception. I wrote about Minnesota's challenges in building around Towns and Russell. I wrote about Colin Sexton's future. And I wrote about the Bulls coaching search or lack thereof.
Well, good. If you didn't get your fill of Jarrett Culver, you can get some of that from John at The Athletic this week. And we will be back now. We're back on once a week. We'll probably maybe we'll like preview some of the bubble stuff next week, and then we'll have real actual basketball games to talk about.
Exciting times
there. But I was looking at the schedule. It's like, it's crazy. Like how many on paper amazing games you can get when you eliminate the 8 worst teams.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
It's going to be pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now some teams may not be trying that hard. They might be ramping up, et cetera. You know, there's a lot of games that Milwaukee is in. And the Lakers and those teams don't really have much incentive to really be pushing it. So we may see these games not being quite as good in reality as they are on paper, but there'll be plenty of stuff to talk about. I can't wait for it.
Absolutely.
All right. We will talk to y'all next week. Till then.